Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News Team. Now, here's what's happening.
Biden in the Holy Land. Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. In Jerusalem today, President Biden indicated to Israel America's unwavering support of the Jewish state.
I'm proud to say that our relationship with the state of Israel is deeper and stronger, in my view, than it's ever been.
The president announcing a new security pact with Israel today. Tomorrow, he heads to Saudi Arabia. Former Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard.
He's saying, hey, we've got to go and get help to wage war against Russia in order to save, quote unquote, democracy. And I'm going to go talk to a bunch of autocratic dictators and ask them for oil and ask them for help.
While in the royal kingdom, the president will have a private audience with the crown prince. A new Pew Research poll finds most Americans believe the president's policies are hurting the U.S. economy. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy says those policies are directly responsible for sky-high inflation.
Inflation is waterboarding the American people. People are scared they're not going to be able to retire until they're 92.
The chair of the president's Council of Economic Advisors, Cecilia Rouse, is downplaying recessionary fears.
Let's go back to the roots of this inflation. This inflation has its roots in the pandemic. Over the past year, we had historical growth in our economy, and we've got a strong labor market, so we're in a position to address these challenges.
The president says new inflation numbers are out of date. No, they're not, says Pennsylvania Congressman Fred Keller.
Gas is still almost $5 a gallon. It's twice what it was when he came into office. The inflation rate was 1.4% in January of 2021. Less than a year and a half later, we're at 9.1, highest records since President Reagan was leading us out of the misery caused by President Carter.
Economists say the price you pay for the stuff you buy right now translates into a $3,400 wage loss for every single working American. A state of emergency in southwestern Virginia, more than 40 people are unaccounted for following flash flooding last night.
It's just mudslides, trees in the road. Water's been in the road, and houses in the road, and it's just a mess.
Heavy rains inundating rural Buchanan County, at least 100 homes damaged. Billy Kreitz with the Virginia Office of Emergency Management.
One of the biggest challenges for us for the search and rescue effort is access to the area. A lot of roadways are blocked by landslides.
The local sheriff has set up a hotline for Virginia families who are looking for lost loved ones. They're considering a return to indoor mask mandates in Los Angeles as the latest variation of COVID-19 drives up hospitalizations and deaths throughout Southern California. Dr. Dean Blumberg with UC Davis Health.
In the past, we were saying if you've been infected, you're probably protected for about 3 months before immunity wears off. We just throw that out the window with this new strain.
The BA.5 variant is driving the sixth wave of COVID-19. Dr. Gerald Parker at Texas A&M.
I don't mean to be a fearmonger, but we still need to be cognizant that the virus hadn't gone away.
He says repeat COVID infections are becoming more commonplace, with some Americans getting the virus three or even four times. A group of Republican senators is headed to the U.S. southern border, where they'll spend a couple of days getting an update on the surge of illegal immigration. There, they'll be meeting with the head of the Texas Rangers, Colonel Steve McGraw.
2014 was chump change compared to where we're at right now, unfortunately.
Colonel McGraw says most of what they're seeing now at the border are single men who have ties to violent gangs.
We've never seen a more ruthless and powerful criminal enterprise in the world than what is right now in our southern border.
Some 13,000 illegal immigrants have entered the tiny town of Eagle Pass, Texas, over the past week, which is where these senators are meeting. Pro-life pregnancy centers across this country are pleading for help as they continue to be the target of violence following last month's Supreme Court landmark ruling on Roe v. Wade.
Since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, pregnancy centers throughout the country have been attacked. impact.
Heidi Matzke is the director of the Alternatives Pregnancy Center in Sacramento, California.
We've had to hire 24-hour on-site security. We've had to add cameras. We've had to arm our staff with pepper spray.
Matzke says a man with a machete tried to gain access to her clinic just a few days ago, but was stopped by a security guard at the front door. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Thursday, Wolf at the White House, sharks in the water, and DeGrom on the Hill.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams, looking at some very nice weather heading into the weekend. I'll be back with forecast details coming up in 10 minutes.
All right, we'll look for you then. Thanks, Kev. Let's check the stories where you live next, all across New York and Pennsylvania. A moment of silence is being observed today at the Tops grocery store in Buffalo, where on this day, 2 months ago, 10 people lost their lives in a racially motivated shooting. The supermarket is scheduled to reopen to the public tomorrow.
One side says it's sacred ground and they should not reopen and they should tear it down. But I think also on the other side, which I agree with, is that this individual came to our neighborhood and did something horrible and tried to weaken us.
Cedric Holloway is a community activist in the Queen City. The accused gunman remains behind bars without bail. A 10-year-old missing persons case out of Steuben County has now been solved half a country away in Rosemont, Minnesota. That's a suburb of Minneapolis. 48-year-old James Everett of Cohocton disappeared in 2013. Minnesota Police Chief Michael Dahlstrom says Everett's remains were found in an old shed along some railroad tracks.
It appeared that the hut had been turned into a makeshift shelter. So they found a piece of rebar was reinforcing the door to keep it closed. There was also some wire. There was makeshift bedding. There was items of food and water throughout.
Police say Everett likely died in the fall of 2013, but they're not sure how he died or why he was in Minnesota. His wife says Everett was an accomplished cook who worked for several restaurants in the Rochester area. Well, Monroe County, New York, has joined Chemung and Erie counties in confirming their first case of the monkeypox. The Rochester area patient is in isolation and does not pose a risk to the general public. Infectious disease expert Dr. Thomas Russo.
Monkeypox is not highly contagious like COVID. There's no risk of getting infected with monkeypox when you're in a train, plane, bus, or subway car, nor in the grocery store.
Anyone who develops a sudden rash on any part of their body should contact their doctor and avoid contact with others until they've been tested for monkeypox. New Yorkers who are dealing with mental health issues are now able to call or text a new 3-digit number to get the help they need. The new 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline has been successfully implemented in all 62 New York counties. Anyone who calls 988 will be directly connected to a trained counselor. The Hempfield School District in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, has become the first in the Commonwealth to ban biological boys from competing in girls' sports. Transgender activist Jamie Cohen led a protest rally against that decision earlier this week.
Our main purpose is to make sure that trans students and all students in the district feel welcome and have a healthy environment to learn in. That's actually proven to reduce suicidal ideation in trans students. So we're out here saving lives.
But supporters say the move is needed to protect girls' sports from the growing influence of the transgender movement.
I think it's important to separate men and women in sports. I think it's important to recognize the biological differences between men and women. And I think by not doing that, you're denying science and putting all females at a disadvantage.
Just a few days ago, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf vetoed the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, which would have mandated a statewide ban on transsexuals competing in girls' sports. Governor Wolf was at the White House yesterday taking part in a roundtable discussion with Vice President Kamala Harris. It had everything to do with the beleaguered healthcare industry. Pennsylvania's investing $250 million into retention and recruitment efforts for nurses who are on the front lines of the COVID pandemic. But critics blame Governor Wolf's COVID closures for decimating dominating Pennsylvania's economy. A political action committee with connections to the Never Trump movement has dipped its proverbial toes into Pennsylvania's gubernatorial race. It's trying to convince Republicans to reject the Republican candidate, Doug Mastriano.
We think that Doug Mastriano is one of the biggest threats to democracy.
That's Gunnar Raimer with the Republican Accountability Pact, which is putting $2 million behind a campaign to try and defeat Mastriano this fall.
The idea of overturning a free and fair election, I can't think of anything less constitutional than that. And Doug Mastriano, after the November election in 2020, leading up to January 6th, was one of the worst actors.
But political strategist Jeffrey Lord says Republicans are eating their own in Pennsylvania, and it is campaigns like this why the GOP has trouble winning in swing states.
My view is if you support a candidate in the primary and the candidate loses, you support the winner. This is July. All kinds of things can happen between July and November. So I don't know the outcome. I wouldn't think of predicting it. Just buckle in and get lots of popcorn.
Most polls show Pennsylvania leaning Democrat in this year's governor's race. Mastriano is facing Attorney General Josh Shapiro in November. Skyrocketing inflation is putting New York's property tax cap law to the test.
State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli's office announced that soaring inflation costs have led to the state's cap on property tax increases to be set at its uppermost limit of 2%. It comes as boosted COVID-19 federal aid for local governments is set to end. More than half of municipal governments in the state set their budgets on the calendar and could have costs that exceed the amount of pandemic aid they're set to receive. Now, that cap has been in place for 10 years to limit the highest property taxes in the country. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
All right, Jeremy, thank you very much. The great New York State Fair just a few weeks away, and hundreds of jobs still need to be filled. Anyone interested can fill out an application at the fair's website, nysfair.ny.gov. That's nysfair.ny.gov. This year's fair runs from Wednesday, August 24th through Monday, Labor Day, September 5th. Well, a serial burglar is ripping off stores in Ithaca, New York, and business owners say this guy is a repeat offender who keeps getting out of jail because of New York's bail reform law.
He had been arrested and released for like 6 burglaries on Thursday, and then he broke into my place on Saturday. So it was kind of crazy that he admitted to breaking into the first 6 businesses and got arrested and just released to go do it again because of the whole bail reform thing.
Brian Wallenbach with Ithaca Wholesale Furniture, one of nearly a dozen small businesses that have been burglarized in Ithaca, New York. Wallenbach speaking there with WENY Television. Broome County, New York is harnessing the power of the wind. The Bluestone Wind Project is up and running in the towns of Windsor and Sanford. It'll feature 26 towering turbines on 5,600 acres. Broome County Executive Jason Garner says the revenues generated from wind energy will help out the local economy.
We can use that money from the project to cut taxes, make investments in our roads and in our communities, and our schools are going to be getting a lot of money. But, you know, also the fact that, you know, basically this project, I think, is going to power about 54,000 homes.
Garner says these turbines can create enough energy to power all of Broome County. Shark attacks are intensifying along the eastern seaboard. 2 swimmers were bit at a beach on Long Island yesterday. A shark attacked a surfer on a paddleboard at Smith Point Park.
This individual was knocked off the paddleboard, took a punch at the shark, and saw the shark coming back around.
Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone.
He's a little shaken up, as you can imagine, but we believe he's going to be okay.
Then again last night, a man in waist-deep water near Fire Island was bit in the hand and back by a shark. Police in boats and on jet skis are keeping a close eye on the water. They're also watching from above using drones to monitor the shores there along Long Island. 2-time Cy Young Award winner Jacob DeGrom is going to be on the mound tonight for the Syracuse Mets. He's in rehab from a shoulder injury that has kept him out of the big leagues all season long. The game tonight against the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp already sold out. Time to check more sports next on the Family Life Noon Report.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, the Mets played long ball last night with Atlanta as Escobar, Canna, and Lindor all went deep in their 7-3 win. The Braves also hit three home runs, but they were all solo shots. Chris Bassitt only gave up one of them over six solid innings to pick up the victory. JT Brubaker fanned nine over seven innings, gave up no runs, but the Pirates fell to the Marlins in 10, 5-4. Zach Wheeler didn't really have his good stuff against Toronto. The Blue Jays scored six times against him and beat the Phillies 8-2. Elsewhere in the National League, the Giants came back from a three-run deficit to beat Arizona 4-3. Dodgers were down six against St. Louis, but L.A. scored seven unanswered runs to beat the Cardinals 7-6. Rockies down San Diego 10-6. A wild pitch in the bottom of the 10th gave the Yankees a 7-6 win over Cincinnati. That despite the Reds getting back-to-back-to-back home runs in the second inning from Kyle Farmer, Mike Moustakas, and Stuart Fairchild. Other interleague matchups saw Baltimore down the Cubs 7-1. Seattle took a pair from Washington 6-4 and 2-1. And the Twins were 4-1 winners over Milwaukee. In the American League, KC, Chicago, Tampa Bay, Texas, and LA were all winners. Speaking of Kansas City, the Royals will be leaving 10 players behind for their weekend series in Toronto. Unvaccinated players are not allowed across the border. Toronto manager Charlie Montoyo is vaccinated, but he won't be in the Blue Jays dugout anymore because the Jays fired him, so he's no longer their manager. That is a look at sports.
All right, Randy, man, thank you kindly. Still to come on the Noon Report, a state of emergency in the Commonwealth of Virginia, Biden in the Holy Land, and why abortion is not health care. We'll peel back the politics and look at the science after this.
If you believe the headlines, America is facing an impending and unwelcome theocracy. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In response to the Dobbs decision, as well as the Supreme Court's clear, consistent support for religious liberty this term, many progressives are now warning of an imminent Christian theocracy. Among the loudest voices predicting our collective demise are mainstream media outlets. A recent story in Reuters, for example, claimed, quote, U.S. Supreme Court takes aim at separation of church and state. But what's missing in virtually all of these pieces is an understanding of the Establishment Clause. The Establishment Clause is derived from the opening lines of the First Amendment, which states, quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, there are two ways this statement is commonly misunderstood. First, it's often described as establishing a wall of separation between church and state. But in fact, those words are found nowhere in the Constitution. The phrase was actually coined later in a letter written by Thomas Jefferson. Second, and more importantly, it is assumed that if organized religion cannot be supported by the state, then secularism is somehow neutral, and thus by default, anything goes as long as it's secular. Well, understanding the historical context is essential to understanding that in the 18th century, an established religion referred to an official state church. Our founding fathers, most notably James Madison, believed that religious liberty was an innate right, inseparable from the freedom of conscience. They also believed that religion would better flourish in a free marketplace of ideas. That thinking was the basis of the Free Exercise Clause. Although the rights of conscience should not be controversial, they, today, somehow, are. By claiming secularism to be neutral, 20th century secularists used the concept of a living constitution to transform the meaning of the First Amendment, attempting to keep religious institutions from accessing state funds and allowing only secular views in the public arena. There are many court cases that illustrate this. One of the more important, Torcaso v. Watkins in 1961, which declared unconstitutional Maryland's requirement that office holders state belief in God. Rather than ruling on the basis of Article 6, which prohibited religious tests for public office, the Supreme Court instead ruled on the basis of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment and of the 14th Amendment, which prohibits states from violating the rights guaranteed to U.S. citizens. In the process, the First Amendment was turned on its head, taking a clause that was intended to keep the state from backing any one denomination and construing it to position the state in opposition to all organized religions. Just as Hugo Black listed secular humanism as one of a number of religions, quote, which do not teach what would generally be considered a belief in the existence of God, end quote. Now, calling humanism a religion here was not outlandish. After all, secularism involves certain claims about the cosmos, about human existence and human nature. And yet, in 1994, the Ninth Circuit ruled in Palazzo v. Capistrano Unified School District that while religion should be broadly interpreted for free exercise clause purposes, anything arguably non-religious should not be considered religious in applying the Establishment Clause. In other words, secular organizations get to play both sides, qualifying as a religion for the free exercise clause, but free from constraints from the Establishment Clause. Now, in the recent decision in the Coach Kennedy case, the Supreme Court has continued its long overdue corrections to the anti-religious way the First Amendment has been interpreted. In other words, there's no reason to fear an impending theocracy, but plenty of reasons to welcome this long overdue correction to unjust and ahistorical understandings of religion. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Thank you, John. Let's take it outside next. Kevin Williams.
Well, good afternoon to all. Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. It's sunshine, mixed clouds, and in parts of central New York, a brief shower. High temperatures, 70s and low 80s. Tonight, moonlit skies, comfortably cool, low in the 50s and near 60. Sunny and pleasantly warm tomorrow and Saturday, with high temperatures both days ranging generally in the 80s.
All right, Kevin Williams, thank you kindly. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price. Great to have you with us today. A lot going on this Thursday, the 14th of July. We'll begin in rural southwestern Virginia, where epic flooding has left dozens of people still unaccounted for after heavy rain last night triggered mudslides in Buckhannon County. That's where we find correspondent Kathy Park.
Scenes of devastation in rural Virginia. Cars stacked up like toys, roofs of homes scattered on the ground, and roads turned to rivers.
Water kept coming up, 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 and then I thought it was receding, and then all of a sudden it made another big surge and came back and just wiped everything out.
Over 100 homes sustained damage. Governor Glenn Youngkins declared a state of emergency. President Biden took part in a joint news conference today with the Prime Minister of Israel on the second leg of his four-day visit to the Holy Land.
You have an ironclad commitment from the United States of America to Israel's security.
Israel's head of state stressing the importance of being firm with Iran.
The Iranian regime must know that if they continue to deceive the world, they will pay a heavy price.
Mr. Biden's trip to the Middle East continues tomorrow with a stop in Saudi Arabia. Inflation is the worst it's been since 1981. The number for June, 9.1%. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
Inflation is unacceptably high, and it should be the top priority to bring inflation down.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz says inflation is a direct consequence of reckless spending by the Biden administration.
There's no limit to the trillions of dollars they can spend. There's no limit to the trillions of dollars of money they can print. And by the way, gas prices under Joe Biden had risen 48% before Putin invaded Ukraine. So as much as he might try to blame it on Putin, this is Joe Biden's baby. He created it. He owns it.
Food costs are up 12% from this time last year. Gas 60% higher than this time last year. And the price you pay for the stuff you buy amounts to a $3,400 wage loss for every single working American. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is blasting the work of pro-life pregnancy centers. She told reporters yesterday that these clinics exist to con women.
Those crisis pregnancy centers that are there to fool people who are looking for pregnancy termination help outnumber true abortion clinics by 3-1. We need to shut them down here in Massachusetts, and we need to shut them down all around.
We need to shut them down, says Senator Warren. Heidi Matsky is the director of one such clinic, Alternatives Pregnancy Center in Sacramento, California.
Our pregnancy center is a fully licensed OBGYN medical clinic. We've got doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners. The women that serve at our clinic, most of them have experienced abortion for themselves. And they basically say, had they only had a pregnancy center like ours to turn to when they face their unplanned pregnancy, their life today would look so much different.
Matsky's had to hire 24-hour security detail to protect her clinic from violent abortion activists in the aftermath of last month's reversal of the Roe v. Wade decision. It's 25 past the hour, and this is the Noon Report on Family Life.
This is Faith Under Fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, Tara Sander Lee, Director of Life Sciences at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Abortion is a hot and polarizing topic. Tara, would you help us look at some of the misconceptions being wielded against life for the preborn?
Absolutely. You're right. There are many misconceptions, so I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
One claim is that women die from childbirth more than abortion procedures.
Yes, and that claim is actually false because it is based on a study that relied on flawed U.S. maternal mortality data, which even the CDC admits is incomplete. And I can tell you this because I currently sit on the Biden administration's Secretary's Advisory Committee for Infant and Maternal Mortality. So it's important to understand that several states do not even report abortion data, and in states that do report, the data is inconsistent. So we have to look elsewhere where there is better reporting. So studies from Scandinavian countries with far more complete and accurate reporting on pregnancy outcomes, abortion, and childbirth show that the risk of a mother dying from an abortion is almost four times greater than that from childbirth. And a more recent peer-reviewed analysis found 11 separate studies that examined death certificates linked to reproductive health records. And every one of the 11 studies showed an increased risk of death among women following an abortion.
Wow. And I thank you that the folks at Charlotte Lozier Institute, you really care about the research, the true science behind these issues. A liberal advocacy group is now offering up to $250 to service industry workers for every sighting of the justices who helped overturn Roe v. Wade, the former court ruling that made abortion on demand legal in the U.S. With the overturning at the national level, some folks believe that abortions are now completely banned. What's the truth on that, Tara?
Yeah, so the truth on that is that now in this current post-Dobbs era that we're in, there is not a complete nationwide ban on abortion. So now elected officials will now set abortion policy based on where consensus is found. So overturning Roe now allows Americans to have a discussion and debate in the public square, and the people, through their elected officials at the state and federal level, will try to come to consensus on abortion policy. Some states, like Texas and Mississippi, will have total or near total limits on abortion, while others, like California and New York, will have few or no limits on abortion. You can actually go to a website called Life Saving Laws in the States, and that's at sbaprolife.org/lifesavinglaws.
Another misconception is that abortion qualifies as safe health care.
Yeah, this is also a big misconception because an induced abortion is not healthcare. It is a violent act that kills an innocent human being, an unborn child with a beating heart who sucks their thumb and can feel pain. So this act of violence not only kills an unborn child, but it puts women at serious risk of harm from the abortion procedure. So it is not safe at all. And so we know that some of the risks from having an abortion can include uterine perforation, cervical laceration, infection, hemorrhage, death, and even future pregnancy complications, not to mention studies that have shown increased risk of mental health disorders such as depression, anxiety, and suicide. And I think it's really important that people understand that induced abortion, which intentionally kills the unborn child, should not be confused with health care that involves separating a mother from her unborn child in life-threatening situations to try and save both lives. So in any high-risk pregnancy, the fact is that all state pro-life laws have exemptions to save the life of a mother and specifically allow for treatment of these life-threatening complications, such as ectopic pregnancy, which is a medical procedure that is different from an abortion. So in these life-threatening situations, there is no legal or medical question that her life can be protected. But there are serious risks and concerns if a woman does undergo an abortion, and that is not safe health care.
That's Tara Lee Sander with the Charlotte Lozier Institute. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
All right, Tracy, thank you for that. The name of the program, Faith Under Fire. It comes your way Thursdays during the Noon Report or online anytime at familylife.org.
Well, good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The weather last couple days certainly has been unsettled with sunshine, showers, and thunderstorms in the mix. But things are settling down now, and high pressure is set to deliver some beautiful weather heading into the weekend. Friday and Saturday look terrific. Sunday, some sunshine is expected, but parts of our area, especially in Pennsylvania, may see a thundershower. In the meantime, for this afternoon, it's sunshine, mixed clouds, and in parts of central New York, a brief shower. High temperatures, 70s and low 80s. Tonight, moonlit skies, comfortably cool, low in the 50s and near 60. Sunny and pleasantly warm tomorrow and Saturday, with high temperatures both days ranging generally in the 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. And finally, at noon today, a Virginia chef has turned the Happy Meal into something of a McDelicacy. It's taken social media by storm. Family Life's Brian Query explains.
The fine dining experience normally consists of five-star food, but would you order a gourmet McPasta? Food challenges are all over the internet, but one Virginia chef has created a concoction that has TikTok stunned, making pasta out of a McDonald's Happy Meal, consisting of chicken nuggets, french fries, and apple pies. Chef Amy Brandwine used the aforementioned McOfferings to make tortellini, combining the nuggets, fries, and pie in the filling, and even sweet and sour sauce on the plate. But still, some were calling the final dish a McSteak, as it included just three tortellini, a small dish for the amount of food that went into it. Still, the video has been viewed nearly 2 million times on TikTok, so somebody out there must be saying, I'm loving it. Brian Query, Family Life News.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Brian. And just like that, we are out of time. That's our world for Thursday, the 14th of July. Thanks for being a part of it. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.